Shabbat Shalom. For those of us who live or at home on the alphabet street of American Jewish life, the drama of these weeks between the election and the upcoming inauguration is due as much to what has been said as what has not been said. Let's begin with the obvious. 5 days after the presidential election, the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, American Jewry's premier voice in the fight against bigotry and anti-Semitism, condemned the appointment of Stephen Bannon as senior counselor for the president. In the words of the press release from the ADL, quote, "It is a sad day when a man who presided over the premier website of the alt-right, a loose-knit group of white nationalists and unabashed anti-Semites and racists, is slated to be a senior staff member in the People's House." While some Jewish organizations have joined the ADL in its vocal opposition to Bannon, others have remained noticeably quiet. The AJC, the American Jewish Committee, American Jewry's leading advocate in public affairs, has been conspicuously quiet on Bannon, issuing the rather anodyne statement that, quote, "Presidents get to choose their team, and we do not expect a comment on every key advisor." Both organizations have come under fire. The ADL has been criticized not only for having its thumb on the scale against the Trump administration, but also for the tactical blunder of having alienated itself from an administration with which it and the rest of the Jewish community will have to work. As for the AJC, in explicitly and not explicitly calling out Bannon by name, has been pilloried by some for having fallen short of its mission to prevent the infringement of civil and religious rights of Jews and to alleviate the consequences of persecution. As Eliana Lauder recently pointed out in an op-ed, be it Senator Chuck Hagel's 2012 nomination to Secretary of Defense, or more interestingly, Jeffrey Sessions' 86 nomination to the U.S. District Court in Alabama, to name but two, the AJC has a decades-long record of voicing public concern over political appointments. To not speak out now, the thinking goes, is a noteworthy stain on the blotter of the AJC. Unless one thinks the debate is limited to the political right, the current drama unfolding is actually on the political left. At the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, as they contemplate Congressman Keith Ellison as its new chairman, the ADL has characterized his views on Israel to be, quote, both deeply disturbing and disqualifying. In this instance, the ADL has found itself under attack from the left for having unfairly criticized Ellison over views held by much of his party and, for that matter, American Jewry. Other groups such as J Street have rushed to defend Ellison, in their words, a champion of pro-Israel, pro-peace policies, whose thoughtful and considered leadership has shown deep respect for Jewish values and the Jewish people. The AJC, which some years ago defended Ellison's right to take his oath of office on the Quran, has not weighed in on his views regarding Israel, which, as some have recently pointed out, are ironically in sync with Trump's choice for Secretary of Defense. From the left, from the right, on this question of speaking out on the issues of the day, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't moment. The only real decision the lay and professional heads of these organizations need to make is the choice of by which segment of the community they want to be criticized. In its purest form, the question is not merely one of pragmatics, of choosing battles when it is and isn't advisable to speak out or stay silent. The question is one of principle. Are there moments that not only may the American Jewish community speak out, but we must speak out on the issues of the day? It could be hate speech or Israel or refugees, subjects about which American Jews have a historical and parochial stake, but it could also be gun control, the environment, gender, health care, or otherwise. There are a host of concerns on the docket of our country which not only impact the Jewish citizenry of this nation, but also, and it's to this question I want to turn, about which Jewish sources have what to say. What is our responsibility to the stranger in our midst? What does economic justice look like through a Jewish lens? How shall we tend and protect God's earth? How best do we ensure that every person created in the divine image stands equal before the law? We do our tradition and our people a great disservice if we circumscribe our sphere of concern to the Iran deal, the plight of Soviet Jewry, and whether the Ten Commandments should or shouldn't be displayed on government grounds. As Jews, we believe that all of the earth is the Lord's concern. Indeed, I'm hard-pressed to think of a single area of human activity, and certainly political activity, that could not somehow be informed by our Jewish tradition. Contemporary Jewry, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks explains, faces two political situations for which there is no precedent, at least not for the past 2,000 years. First, and this is a sermon for another day, the state of Israel, Jews wielding power, sovereign, a state created by Jews and informed by Jewish values. The second is the shift of certain diaspora Jewries, American Jewry being the most preeminent example, from the political margins to the center. No longer would Judaism be a lifestyle choice restricted to the private domain. As Americans, it is the First Amendment's prohibition against the establishment of any religion and concurrent guarantee of an individual's free exercise of religion that has served to set the expectations of a politically empowered American Jewry even higher. In other words, because the promise of America is freedom of religion, but not freedom from religion, American Jews began to believe and still believe that not only could they participate in the public square, but that Judaism itself bore the potential to inform public policy. After all, the thinking goes, if it is not only a right, but a duty of Americans' religion to advance their views in public, then how can we as Jews abdicate our rightful place in shaping that public discourse that we inhabit? And yet, nevertheless, we squirm. For a variety of reasons, we continue to wrestle with the question of just how assertive American Jewry should be in the public sphere. You need only consider the primary mitzvah of the upcoming Hanukkah holiday, lighting the menorah, to understand the debate. We are commanded, we know, to light the menorah in a visible place, by a door or a window for both Jews and non-Jews to see. That said, as both the Talmud and Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, explains, in certain times when such public expressions of Judaism would be unwise or unsafe, one may place the menorah inside the home, away, out of sight of public view. By this telling, where we do or don't place a menorah signals a lot more than a technical aesthetic choice. It's a bellwether for our Jewish sense of self. Are we willing, both literally and figuratively, to put our Judaism out there, to have the light of our tradition shed outwardly? Or do we restrict its radiance to just within our homes? The menorah placement is a litmus test on the question of just how assertive the Jewish community will or won't be. And this year, as much as any other, raises the question anew. And yes, it is a question that impacts not just the ADL or the AJC, but us here in our own community. How shall we, Park Avenue Synagogue, think about political advocacy moving forward? How shall we speak out, and if and when necessary, mobilize our community? To begin with, let me state clearly that we are a 501(c), and as such, according to the RRS, I've never quoted tax code from the Bema, are, quote, absolutely prohibited from directly or indirectly participating in, intervening in, any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for elective public office. Neither I, nor my colleagues, nor this institution as a whole may engage in any activities that A, would favor one candidate over another, B, oppose a candidate in some manner, or C, have the effect of favoring a candidate or a group of candidates. This ban on political campaign activity, however, according to the IRS code, quote, does not restrict leaders of organizations from expressing their views on political matters if they are speaking for themselves as individuals, nor are leaders prohibited from speaking about important issues of public policy. In other words, while endorsing or opposing a candidate is strictly verboten, to speak to the issues of the day is well within the purview of this pulpit and our programming efforts. In my mind, however, the IRS code is the least interesting part of this conversation. A synagogue or rabbi must be prudent on matters of political advocacy because, as any student of our tradition knows, while our Jewish sources may speak to every issue of the day, they do not speak uniformly on any one. It is intellectually indefensible for a preacher to claim that Judaism says X on any single topic, and it's altogether inadvisable for any Jew to claim to represent the Jewish voice on any single subject. Second, we should exercise caution before engaging in political advocacy because it has the potential to have divisive ramifications on our community. A synagogue is a place of community building, oftentimes a refuge, and we must be thoughtful to the sensibilities of all those who call Park Avenue Synagogue their political home, their spiritual home. But perhaps the most compelling reason for restraint on political advocacy is to be found not in the IRS code, but in the mission statement of our synagogue, which, if you look at the Shabbat Shalom sitting at your seat, states, Park Avenue Synagogue seeks to inspire, educate, and support our membership towards living passion-filled Jewish lives. Our front line is every Jewish soul. Our primary cause for advocacy is a shared and bright Jewish future. We must be insistent in seeking to fulfill the primary and differentiated and sacred mission of a synagogue. If we fail to produce educated and educated and engaged Jews, then there is no ADL, there is no AJC or APAC. If we fail to create Jewish identity and Jewish continuity, then the question of what Jews do or don't have to say about issue X, Y, or Z will cease to be relevant altogether. There are many reasons to exercise caution before speaking out and acting on the issues of the day. And as your rabbi, I will continue to strive for prudence and wisdom as we go forward. But speak out we must, notwithstanding our limitations, notwithstanding our primary mission as a communal generator of communal and individual Jewish identity, our synagogue must always seek to be responsive to the callings of the hour. The goal of any self-respecting religious organization, our own included, is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. Ours must be an institutional embodiment of the prophet, a person who, in the words of Heschel, speaks for those too weak to plead their own cause, a person who is not tolerant of wrongs done to others, who resents other people's injuries and rebels against the evil of indifference. The evil of indifference is a sin that I will not carry. Yes, we will seek to educate our membership on the range of opinions on any issue, but we must never let the paralysis of analysis impede our prophetic calling. Of course, our primary mission is to bring Jewish souls closer to our tradition, but we must ever be mindful of American Jewry's expectation that our tradition speaks to our contemporary condition. Of course, our goal is not to be unnecessarily divisive, but the goal of respectful dialogue and institutional leadership is not contingent on across-the-board agreement. Do I expect you to agree with everything my colleagues or I say? Of course not. I hope not. That is, after all, why God created Kiddush after services. As Rabbi Israel Salanter said, a rabbi whose community does not agree with him, does not disagree with him, is no rabbi, and a rabbi who fears his community is no man. And as I tell all my interns and assistant rabbis, you're not really a rabbi until someone has walked out on one of your sermons. The relationship between clergy and congregant amongst congregants is a sacred one, but so is freedom of the pulpit for me and my colleagues. My job and the job of my colleagues is not to tell you how the world is, but how the world, by way of Jewish values, ought to be. With all of the qualifications and all of the caution, let me state clearly my hope and my expectation that this pulpit and this synagogue will not only challenge you, but prompt you to act on the issues of our day. Achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh v'anochi lo yadati. The Lord is in this place and I did not know. These words spoken by Jacob at the beginning of our Torah reading signal Jacob's discovery that God's presence can be found in even the most unlikely, seemingly ungodly places. God is invested in the question of environmental justice. God is invested in the question of gun policy. God is invested in civil rights, in poverty, in healthcare, in economic and education issues. Whether we knew it or not, God is present in all these places and others as well. To be a descendant of Jacob, to be part of the children of Israel, means to believe that our faith informs every precinct of our lives. So with prudence, with wisdom, and most of all with love for the diversity of our community, let us find our voice in the public square, each one of us doing our part in pulling down a piece of heaven, the peace of the heavens, upon Israel, upon all of humanity. Amen.